Hello, everyone. Welcome to the reading of the Ford Dodge Messenger for Thursday, March 18th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Glad to have you listening, as always. We have a beautiful day going on in Fort Dodge, a little on the coolish side as it's only about 40 degrees, but finally we're seeing some sunshine and should for a few days until first part of next week when we're expecting some rain. So we'll have a detailed look at the forecast a little bit later in our time together. First article in today's Messenger is entitled Welcome Home as Displaced Kenyon Place residents returning to their apartments. There's a picture of Kenyon Place resident Sharon Hickey as she receives a welcome basket from French into her on Wednesday. Hickey, along with more than 50 other residents, were displaced for over 6 months due to a this week. At about 3:30 a.m. on August 25th, 2020, a fire suppression system connected in the attic above an occupied unit on the third floor burst, flooding the entire building with water. By 10 o'clock, Friendship Haven staff had evacuated all 55 residents, moving most to the Brookstone Inn for temporary housing, while others moved to other units on Friendship Haven campus or went with family. We had a great team effort. People from all over campus came, said Raleigh Peterson, Vice President of Resident Life at Friendship Haven. We assigned a staff member to one or two residents each so they could get absolutely essential items as they were going to other places or with family or the hotel, so we had a great accountability system set up there. When the residents were first displaced, Friendship Haven President and CEO Julie Thorson said she expected the flood damage to be repaired and the residents able to move back in by mid-October. However, the damage is far more extensive than originally thought, and many of the building's 56 units had to be gutted down to the studs to repair walls, floors, and ceilings. Friendship Haven hired Jensen Builders Limited of Fort Dodge as the project's general contractor and got started on the repairs right away. It was major, Peterson said, of the damage. We had to clear out the entire apartments, vacate literally everything, furniture, appliances, cupboards, you name it. While the flooding started in the attic above the third floor, the worst damage occurred on the first floor where the water pooled. Even with the water damage, there was not any structural damage done to the building. Having a flood in the middle of a global pandemic is like having a disaster within a disaster. The Friendship Haven staff handled it as best they could, Peterson said. It worked out surprisingly well, as chaotic as it was. He said the silver lining in all this is due to COVID-19 because we had more openings than we normally would have. For some of the residents, Friendship Haven moved them to temporary housing in other areas of campus, like the River Ridge and Gardens Assisted Living Apartments, and the Skilled Rehab Center. It would be easy to be grumpy, but by far the majority have been pleased with the accommodations we've done, the leadership that's been present, and the communication, Peterson said. I'm proud of what Friendship Haven has done during this difficult time. I think we did a really good job with it. It's taken a team effort. Peterson said the process of repairing all the water damage had been much like starting over and building a new building. The Kenyon Place building is about 15 years old. We did also take advantage of the opportunity to do some repairs on normal wear and tear, and we installed all new heating and cooling units in each apartment as preventative maintenance. Jensen Builders has been a good partner through this process, Peterson said, adding that they understood the urgency in the project to be able to get residents back in their homes as soon as possible. Kenyon Place resident Sharon Hickey was able to move back into her apartment on Wednesday. She spent some time staying with her grandchildren and children at the Best Western Starlight Village Inn and Suites, but she was happy to be back home. It's wonderful to have your own things in your own space, she said. Someday it's all organized and put away. Someday it will be all organized and put away. But it's really nice to be back, and they're also nice and welcoming. Even with being displaced from her home for half a year, Hickey was looking on the bright side of it all. It's been a really good growing experience for me, she said. I got to know my grandchildren on their own turf. The rest of the residents of the third floor will be moving in over the next week or two. and other residents will be moving in as the second and first floor construction is completed. Peterson said he anticipates the remaining Kenyon Place residents to be moved back in by May 1st. Peterson said the final cost of the damage is still being calculated, but will likely be upwards of $1 million. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, Text My Gov is the title of the next article. The city introduces a new communication platform. There's a picture of Amanda Holmes, who is the Human Resources and Communications Specialist for the City of Fort Dodge, explaining how to use Text My Gov, a platform used to connect residents with the city. If a Fort Dodge resident has a question about recycling, how to pay a bill, or even a question about chickens, there's a new way to receive the correct information in a timely fashion, according to Amanda Holmes, City Human Resources and Communications Specialist. The city has introduced a new platform called Text My Gov. Text My Gov is going to replace the Connect Fort Dodge platform that citizens have been using since about 2016, she said. We were approached by this software company out of Logan, Utah. I sat in on the demo and hearing from employees and citizens about some of the frustrations they had. I thought this could be a viable option to move to in order to replace that platform. I presented it to Dave Fierk, the city manager, and he was totally on board. Holmes said TextMyGov is simple to use and more cost-effective for the city. It is available to use now. It saves the city a substantial amount of money and uses something we all have, a cell phone, Holmes said. To get started, residents just need to send a text message to 515-408-9888. You can text hi or hello and you get a text message prompt. Holmes said, we encourage people to program it into their phone like a normal contact. From there, residents can type keywords like complaints, yard waste, garbage, or payment. You text yard waste to this number, Holmes said. It gives you three prompts and you're done. A list of keywords to text include, but is not limited to, recycling, pothole, animal control, contacts, permits, office hours, recreation, bill pay, yard waste, and garbage collection. If they text something and I don't get a response, I actually get a message, Holmes said. We can go in and build in certain responses. She's already had to do that after someone wanted to know about chickens. The first response I built was chickens, Holmes said. People call to ask if they can have chickens, and you can as long as it doesn't bother your neighbors. For information that can be found on the city's website, links will be provided to direct the user to the correct place. When reporting an issue to the city, TextMyGov will guide the user through a series of steps that allows you to submit all the necessary information and even allows you to upload a picture. The texting platform is more private than what the app was, Holmes said. She said in the app, people could see who submitted a complaint about them. That will no longer be the case with TextMyGov. Residents can also opt into a max text message group for things like road closures. Holmes said the C-Click Fix program will be phased out over the next few months. We really wanted people to move to this TextMyGov platform, she said. All the city staff is pretty excited about this transition. It's a great thing for the city and the citizens. Not only is it user-friendly, but it saves the city some money that can be redirected to other areas. To use TextMyGov, again, send a greeting to 515-408-9888. Type in a keyword, get an answer. To receive city alerts, text one of the keywords below to 91896. City notifications keyword is Fort Dodge. Commercial snow routes keyword is FDComSnow. Residential snow routes keyword is FDRESSNOW, FDRESSNOW. Road closure notices keyword FDRoadClosure. Water main breaks keyword FD water. To opt out, text stop at any time to remove yourself from the notification list. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger, Webster County Health Department showcases max vaccination efforts to the state. That will be the title of the next article. Director Kerry Prescott showcased the Webster County Health Department's mass vaccination procedures in Governor Kim Reynolds' press conference Wednesday, delivering details other counties could use as COVID-19 vaccine production ramps up dramatically. Webster County is a great example of how communities are working together to put the infrastructure and processes in place so that they can scale up the vaccination efforts as more vaccines become available, Reynolds said. Prescott was invited to speak at the press conference at the Web Health Department's efforts left an impression during the governor's visit to a vaccine clinic at Crossroads Mall on March 7th. The collaboration that I witnessed that day, it was seamless. She said, it is a great example of what other communities can emulate. I'm confident it will help other communities to ramp up. That clinic, where over 700 shots were given, will be dwarfed by Thursday's clinic, where Webster County Health Department will deliver 1,770 vaccines. Thanks to a system in place and tested by the county, Webster County will be ready for even larger increases when production of Pfizer, BioNTech, Moderna, and Johnson & Johnson vaccine catches up with demand. We have the capacity to do more if the vaccine is available, and we have the capacity to add another manufacturer, said Prescott at the podium before turning to share a smile and a laugh with the governor. Using a wide spectrum of staff and volunteers from county departments and community partners, the county has designated three pods at each vaccine clinic. The pod organization gives the county the ability to vaccinate a certain number of people each hour, scalable to the vaccine amount available. Today, for example, the county will be able to deliver 300 vaccines per hour. Pods also allow the county to deliver vaccines from multiple manufacturers at once. As the county's network of retired nurses, school nurses, and healthcare nurses help inject vaccines, volunteers from service groups, county supervisors, Board of Health representatives, and other parts of the community help with patient flow and data entry. This is vital as it also helps with controlling the costs for our local public health agency, Prescott said, crediting community partnerships as a key to success through the pandemic. Staffing is streamlined in the pods. Everyone has a duty and follows incident command. The entire process of receiving a vaccine takes 25 minutes, 15 of which are spent waiting after receiving an inoculation to monitor for reactions. In between groups, Fort Dodge Fire Department personnel sanitize chairs with an electrostatic gun. As other counties prepare for the unprecedented production of vaccines, that level of efficiency and organization is something they may need for success. At the conference, Reynolds announced that all adults would be eligible for a COVID-19 vaccine starting April 5th. Iowa continues to gain momentum in our recovery from COVID-19, she said. The vaccine is working and life is getting back to normal. Reynolds' announcement of eligibility expansion, faster than some previous national estimates anticipated, comes on the heels of President Joe Biden's announcement that all Americans would be eligible for vaccine by May 1st. As of Wednesday, Reynolds said more than 95% of Iowans over 65 years of age received at least one dose of a COVID-19 vaccine, as well as 28.3% of Iowans aged 18 through 64. She also noted significant progress with complete vaccination of those 18 and up as Iowa improved its rate to 17.6%. During the week of March 29th, the federal government projects shipment of 20 million vaccine doses nationwide, and shipments that could exceed 22 million per week come April. A bill United States Senator Joni Ernst co-authored to cut down on wasteful federal government spending has advanced in the Senate. The legislation, named the $1 billion Boondoggle Act, was unanimously approved by the Senate Homeland Security and Government Affairs Committee on Wednesday. The Iowa Republican said the bill would require a report on certain federal projects that are way over budget or behind schedule. The federal government gets away with spending billions of dollars on projects that are billions of dollars over budget and years behind schedule, Ernst said in a written statement. And the worst part, taxpayers don't even know because the cost and timeline of these projects are hidden. This bill is common sense, and it's got the support of many of my Democratic colleagues, Ernst added. The bill would require the Office of Management and Budget to submit to Congress an annual report listing every government-funded project that is $1 billion or more over budget or 5 years or more behind schedule. The bill is co-sponsored by U.S. Senator Gary Peters, Democratic of Michigan, U.S. Representative Mike Gallagher, Republican of Wisconsin, introduced a version of the bill in the House of Representatives. No decision yet on Senate re-election is the title of the next article. Grassley says he'll let everyone know in September or October. United States Senator Charles Grassley says he hasn't decided whether or not he will seek another term. I'll let everybody know in September or October, Grassley said in a phone interview this week with the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal as part of his weekly Capitol Hill report. I love my work. I tend to spend a lot of hours in the office. I usually get here at 6 in the morning and I leave about 6 at night or later. I may leave Thursday a little earlier so I can get back to Iowa. Grassley, a Republican, is well known for his travels around the state visiting each of the 99 counties every year. The senator also talked about the recently passed stimulus package. Americans making less than $75,000 per year or a married couple making less than $150,000 will likely start to see stimulus checks hit bank accounts this week. The measure passed along party lines in the Senate on March 6, with no Republicans voting to support the measure. Grassley said he would have supported some of the $1.9 trillion bill that passed, but not all. I could support stuff directly related to the pandemic, including some checks to go out, probably for incomes of $50,000 instead of $75,000, he said. We were for the money that was going to go to the schools for testing and for vaccine distribution, and money for helping small businesses and the unemployed, though we were for a shortened period of time on the unemployment. He said he was not in favor of including anything not tied to the pandemic. For example, $135 billion for schools and universities. We thought they needed more money too, but none of the money in this thing is going to start spending out until 2022, and the last dollar may be sent in 2028. What's that got to do with the pandemic, he said. Or $40 billion going to California when they have a $19 billion surplus, or money going to New York when they are fiscally irresponsible. Grassley said when it came to people who were hurt by the pandemic, he and his fellow Senate Republicans were in favor of helping to the tune of $650 billion. Every Republican voted for it, and every Democrat voted against it because the Democrats had a lot of things on their wish list that they wanted on the bill. They used the pandemic as an excuse to get it passed, he said. And on top of that, there's $1 trillion out there of the $4 trillion that was passed in the first four bills that still hasn't been spent. Despite the sharply divided Senate with 50 Republicans and 50 Democrats, Grassley said he still sees many opportunities for bipartisan legislation. Criminal justice reform and lowering the price of pharmaceuticals, working on biofuel measures and antitrust legislation are just a few, the senator said. Grassley was ranked 10th in 2019 for his bipartisan efforts in the Senate in an index produced by the Lugar Center, McCourt School at George Washington University. I always come in the top 10, and some years I've been in the top 5, he said. Going back to the main page of the Messenger, I'll click on where it says more local news and we'll see if there's anything waiting for us there. There's a disturbance downtown and a man has been arrested following a disturbance downtown. Fort Dodge firefighters and paramedics and police officers are tending to an injured man laying on the sidewalk in the 800 block of Central Avenue late Wednesday afternoon following a disturbance. Police Lieutenant Donald McLaren said there was an altercation at Old Boston's Restaurant and Pub at 809 Central Avenue in which a man broke one of the large windows between the restaurant and the entry hallway of the building. He said a man was arrested and was in the Webster County Jail Wednesday night. He was expected to make his first appearance in the Webster County Magistrate Court Thursday morning. The incident was reported at 4:45. And there's a picture of this in the Messenger. And just like they say, there's a man laying on his back. And Fort Dodge police officers and firefighters, EMTs, are standing over the man. Heading back to the main page of the Messenger. Let's go ahead and take a look at from our files and see what awaits us there. From our files goes back to March 2006. There's a picture of a person wearing a green outfit and a big top hat that says Guinness. Sarah McCall, granddaughter of parade co-founder Steve McCall, rode her bike alongside those marching in Kossuth County's 24th annual St. Patrick's Day Parade, held March 17, 2006, 15 short years ago. Heading over to the News of Record, we'll take a look at what awaits us there. The News of Record is for March 18th, and we'll start with the Fort Dodge police logs from Tuesday. Fort Dodge police reported 3 domestic calls, criminal mischief, 1700 block, 3rd Avenue South. Runaway, 1200 block, 4th Avenue South. Sexual assault was reported. Trespassing, 8300 block, South 16th Street. Theft in the 3300 block of 5th Avenue South. Juvenile problems in the 1500 block of 9th Avenue North. In magistrate court on Wednesday, fifth-degree theft charges, Nellie Patterson, 40, of Jefferson, hearing set for April 7th. Violation of parole, Andre Bonner, 47, of Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, transferred to Board of Parole. Seatbelt violation and speeding charges against Richard Tugake of Fort Dodge. Preliminary hearing set on both charges for April 9th, and that is the extent of today's News of Record. We'll head over to the Messenger editorial page entitled STEM Kits Keep Kids Learning During Break. Spring break is underway in the Fort Dodge Community School District, but that doesn't mean the learning has to stop. In fact, students in the after-school program called Dodger Academy have a fun way to learn some things about science, technology, engineering, and mathematics, known as STEM, thanks to some kits provided by Iowa State University Extension and Outreach. 2 kinds of kits were distributed. Students in kindergarten through second grade got one called Scrumptious Stoplight. It is all about picking, preparing, and enjoying healthy foods. It includes a book featuring the always popular Berenstain Bears about junk food. The kit also includes instructions on making healthy snacks. Each kit included a flexible cutting board and a plastic knife so that the kids can learn the technique of slicing fruits and vegetables without the risk of slicing little fingers. Those in 3rd through 5th grades received space-oriented kits called Astronaut Lander. They contain the supplies that the kids can use to make their own version of a lunar lander. It also includes a book about NASA astronaut Leland D. Malvin. Healthy snacks and spaceships seem like sound ways to get the attention of kids and nurture their creativity. The youngest children in the program will get some pointers about healthy eating from cartoon bears, while the older ones can be inspired by the story of a real astronaut hero. These STEM kits were made possible by a partnership between the school district, Iowa State University Extension, and Outreach. That partnership actually started before these kits were made. This is a very beneficial relationship, and we hope it continues. We also hope the Dodger Academy students enjoy their STEM kits and learn a lot from them. There's a letter to the editor in today's Messenger about Webster County needing to improve child care. And the letter is authored by Marjorie Franks of Fort Dodge. To the editor, I'm reading in the Messenger that the Child Care Discovery Center will receive a $600,000 over a period of years to relocate, which I applaud. However, all that grant accomplishes is to keep the status quo, and a new building will require time to build, and the Child Care Discovery's children will need to go somewhere to go for care while it is being built. Meanwhile, 4,673 Webster County children are still without care. When is Webster County actually going to do something to improve Webster County's child care desert? I can remember when, quote, our children are our most important product, used to be quoted often. I can remember when large multi-billion dollar companies like some in this county used to provide child care at the workplace. Does anyone have any thoughts on that? And again, that letter to the editor is sent in by Marjorie Franks of Fort Dodge. There is an article in the Messenger I'll read, and I have an update to it as well. Webster County Health Department booked 1,300 vaccine appointments on Tuesday afternoon. Appointments for Thursday's mass clinic are still available at the time that this was published. Registration was to reopen at 8:30 Thursday morning and online and by telephone. Registrants must qualify for the vaccine by being either age 65 and older or age 64 and younger with a health condition that would put them at risk for severe COVID-19 complications. That was an article in today's Messenger. Since then, it was announced that the vaccination appointments had all been filled and no other vaccination appointments were being made available. We'll take a look next at the Webster City Freeman, the Daily Freeman Journal. Some articles from there. The Camera Alliance will hold their Pancake Day Sunday, March 21st at the Camera Alliance building. Pancakes, sausage, milk, coffee, and juice are on the menu for $5 for adults, $3 for children ages 5 through 11. Children 4 and under eat for free. Serving is from 11 o'clock to 1 a.m. to 1 p.m. and from 4 to 6 p.m. Carryout is available. A prize drawing will be held at 6 o'clock. Masks are encouraged when people are not eating. The City of Webster City has just announced beginning on Monday, March 22nd, the Oak Street Underpass will be closed from 7 a.m. to 5 p.m. daily until completion of the project. The roadway will reopen to traffic each evening or when workers are not on site. If anyone has questions, they may contact the Street Department Superintendent at 515-297-1620 or at Public Works Director at 515-297-1896. About 4,600 doses of the COVID-19 vaccine have been administered so far in Hamilton County, and clinics are continuing to ramp up this month. On Wednesday, Governor Kim Reynolds announced she was opening up the vaccine queue for all adults beginning April 5th, provided supply projections are met. Hamilton County Public Health Administrator Shelby Kruna asked the general public who would be eligible not to contact the health department until April 1st to set up appointments. We'll shortly be letting people know how to call in to get on the schedule. We will move to the full open schedule in April. In the meantime, Kruna said her staff would continue to administer doses to workers at area manufacturers. Clinics for manufacturing workers are planned, she added. Currently, the health department is also continuing to vaccinate people who are 65 and older, along with 64 and younger with underlying health conditions. For the past several weeks, mass clinics have been held at Briggs Woods Conference Center. Our plan for the next few weeks will be to continue to give first doses and booster doses at Briggs Woods through this month of April, said Kruna. Those currently eligible for the first dose can call the health department at 515-832-9565 to get on the list for upcoming clinics. Kruna said those waiting the second dose should get a call reminding them of the booster shot a few days before the scheduled clinic. She said Van Deest Medical Clinic volunteers have been helping out by making the reminder calls. An Iowa Department of Public Health report released Wednesday confirmed that there were 38 additional cases of B1.1.7 variant, known as the United Kingdom or UK variant, in the state of Iowa, bringing the statewide total to 63. First cases were reported February 1st. Because it's here, people should continue to use those good public health precautions because it is very contagious, Corona said. Frequent hand washing, physically distancing, wearing a mask, and staying home when ill are still measures that should be observed, he said. Hamilton County currently has 4% positivity rate for the past 7 days. While that number is encouraging, Corona said it was also deceptive. We know that our testing numbers are not accurate. We're seeing fewer people test for COVID-19. She gave the example that a few days ago, three people tested and all three results came back positive, which gave the county a 100% positivity rate for that day. The next 2 days, no one tested, so the county's positivity rate dropped to zero. It is still imperative that if people think they have COVID-19, that they get tested so we can get people isolated and try to stop the spread of the virus, she said. The virus is still circulating in Hamilton County. We want people to continue to seek out vaccine appointments and continue to wear their masks. If you're not feeling well, stay home. You're listening to the Fort Dodge Messenger on IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service for the Blind. And now we will take a look at today's obituary page. Paul Barrett from Wall Lake. Funeral services for Paul Barrett will be 10:30 Saturday at Trinity Presbyterian Church in Wall Lake. Visitation is 4 to 7 Friday at the Trinity Presbyterian Church in Wall Lake. Barber Ottoman Funeral Home is in charge of arrangements. And that looks to be the completion of today's obituary page. Let's go ahead and click on the sports section. Prime Time is the title of this first article. Brody Teske and Tristan Lara are hours away from realizing a dream well over a decade in the making. The two Fort Dodge Senior High State Champions will be competing for the University of Northern Iowa at the 2021 NCAA National Wrestling Championships, which start here on Thursday in St. Louis at the Enterprise Center. Teske, 12-1 on the season, is a four-time Dodger gold medalist, is the number 5 seed at 125 pounds. The Big 12 champion opens with Oregon State's Brandon Kaler, who is 9-5. I'm just feeling grateful for everyone who has ever supported me right now, Teske said. A redshirt sophomore, those who bought the coupon books for me as a kid, or raffle tickets for summer tournaments, I'm here to represent all of them back home. There have been many sacrifices made to me to get here. I'm just excited, confident, having fun. Lara is the number 23 seed at 149 pounds. The Big 12 fifth place finisher may not have a glossy record. The two-time federal Fort Dodge student senior high state champion is 6-6, but the Panthers redshirt junior has been in every match this season. Lara has faced 9 NCAA qualifiers in his 12 matches. All 6 of his losses have been by decision, including 5 to top 10 opponents. Lara's first opponent is number 10 seed Mike Van Brill of Rutgers, who was 3rd in the Big Ten tournament at 149. I haven't really looked at my draw much or broken anything down, Lara said. I'm focusing on one match at a time, 7 minutes or however long I need to go, as hard as I possibly can. I've just been trying to stay as relaxed as possible. I'm not worried about anything. To me, it's just another week of doing what I love. I'm having fun and letting the fur fly. Teske and Lara are the first two NCAA national qualifiers from Fort Dodge since Mark Ryle, who was with Northern Iowa in 2001. The first rounds of the tournament will be televised at 10 a.m. and 1 p.m. on ESPNU. Second round action will take place at 5 o'clock and 8 o'clock on ESPN2. Quarterfinals are Friday at 10 o'clock on ESPNU, with the semis at 2 o'clock and 7 o'clock on ESPNU and ESPN, respectively. Saturday's medal round starts at 10 a.m. on ESPN2. The finals are at 6 o'clock Saturday night on ESPN. Teske and Lara will be joined by Panther teammates Parker Kekinson at 184, Austin Yant at 165, Lance Runyon at 174, Carter Isley at 285, at Nationals for head coach Doug Schwab's program. Top-ranked Iowa pushed all 10 competitors onto St. Louis with individual number one, Spencer Lee at 125, Jaden Ehrman at 141, Alex Marinelli at 165, Michael Kemmerer at 174, joined by Austin DeSanto, number three at 133, Jacob Warner, number three at 197, Tony Cassiopi at number three, one at 285, Caleb Young, who is number five at 157, and Max Murren, who is at 149. Number 11, Iowa State, has eight national qualifiers. Kyson Tirikina at 125, Zach Redding at 133, Ian Parker at 141, Jarrett Diggin at 141, David Carr at 157, Sam Colbrey at 184, Marcus Coleman at 197, and Gannon Grimmel at 285. Northern Iowa is ranked number 19. Iowa Central Wrestling Team continues to build their momentum. That is the title of the next article. Luke Moffitt likes the level of intensity he is seeing from his Iowa Central Wrestling Team right now. After securing a runner-up finish at the North Central District Championships earlier this month, the Tritons have found a high note, adding a 40-12 dual victory over Ellsworth to resume here Wednesday night in Fort Dodge. Sandwiched between the district meet and the win versus the Panthers, Iowa Central, 2-4 overall, also downed Iowa Lakes 43-10. "We're getting there," said Moffitt, who has led the Tritons to six NJCAA National Team Championships since taking over the program. "We've still got things we need to clean up and continue to work on, but our energy was good and our wrestling from the beginning through until the end of each match was much, much better than earlier this year." Iowa Central, ranked ninth in the latest poll, opened the year with setbacks to Iowa Western, Indian Hills, and North Iowa area. Two of those duels were decided by 2 and 3 points, with bonus points making a big difference. Aiden Harris, Andrew Gamble, Keaton Geertz, Jose Rodriguez, Chuy Gutierrez, Hugo Harp, and Jordan Pryor also earned bonus points in wins versus Ellsworth, while Coy Wheel scored a decision. "It's just so important to get those extra points here and there, especially as we work towards nationals," Moffitt said. "It shows that they are listening and doing what we ask of them, both in practice and out on the mat." Harris, ranked 7th at 133 pounds, kick-started the night with a tech fall over Carter Littlefield at 125. Wheel followed with a 7-1 decision versus Martin Santana before the Tritons forfeited 141 to the Panthers. Nate Lent, a former Southeast Polk standout, earned a fall at 149 for the other Ellsworth win, before Iowa Central reeled off six consecutive victories to close the duel. Gamble, ranked 6th, claimed a 15-0 tech fall over Ricardo Santana. Geertz and Rodriguez picked up forfeits. Gutierrez scored an 11-2 major decision at 184 over Jared Landsberger. Harp, a technical fall at 197 versus Larry Everfield. And Pryor, a fall in 211 versus Chris Sanchez. Geertz, who transferred from the University of Northern Iowa, is ranked 5th, Rodriguez 3rd, and Pryor 4th. Iowa Central recorded 19 takedowns on the night and allowed just 6, with all of them coming by Lent. "We were able to get some guys' matches that we haven't been able to get this year because of the shortened season," Moffitt said. "It was good to be able to do that because you just can't simulate it in practice." The Tritons return to action next Wednesday when they host Iowa Western at 7 o'clock. The Iowa Central men's basketball team picked up a road win at Norfolk, Nebraska. P.J. Ngambi scored 23 points, Aris Abdelnasser added 14, and the Iowa Central Tritons men team posted a 69-62 victory over Northeast here Wednesday night. Ngambi knocked down 11 of 14 shots and also had 7 rebounds and 2 steals for the Tritons, who are 6-10 overall. He completed a season sweep of the Hawks. Javante Keck chipped in 11 points with 8 rebounds, 3 steals, and 3 block shots, while Uso Dibiamaka had 6 points and 6 rebounds. Over the final 20 minutes, the Tritons shot just under 47% from the field and received 16 combined points from Ngambi and Keck. Xavier Ricks had 7 points off the bench, and Jet Pinio 6, knocking down 3 combined 3-pointers. The Tritons return home on Saturday, welcoming in Indian Hills to Hodges Field House for a 3 o'clock tip. The Iowa Central women were able to do just enough down the stretch to hold off Northeast, picking up a 53-50 victory here Wednesday night in Norfolk, Nebraska. Isabel West had another double-double, posting 18 points with 11 rebounds, while Carly West added 12 points, 7 boards, 5 steals, and 4 assists for the Tritons, 8-7 overall for the season, who have now won 4 in a row. Autumn Dykstra chipped in 10 points with 7 rebounds, and Nevaeh Galloway contributed 8 points, 10 rebounds, 4 assists, and 4 steals. Iowa Central claimed an early 12-9 lead and pushed its advantage to 28-20 at the break before outscoring the Hawks in the third, 11-7. Northeast, though, battled back, making it a one-possession game late before Jordan Ingbrook knocked down 2 key free throws and grabbed a loose ball. Ingbrook had 5 points, 3 rebounds, and 3 assists, had 10 points. The Tritons return to action next Wednesday in Estherville against Iowa Lakes, beginning at 5 o'clock. We'll take a look next at the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal for some sports stories. Moving on up is the title of a sports story. Some advice to all Webster City football fans who are planning to follow the team out of town in the fall. Make sure you've got plenty of gas. Extended road trips are the common theme following the release of the new districts for the 2021-2022 seasons by the Iowa High School Athletic Association. As expected, Webster City High School has jumped up to Class 4A and will be housed in District 1, alongside Denison, Schleswig, Fort Dodge, Lamar, Spencer, and Storm Lake. The Lynx will face each of the 5 district teams during the regular season, as well as 4 non-district opponents that will be announced sometime in mid-April. First and second place finishers in the district will automatically qualify for the state playoffs. A road trip to Fort Dodge at 22 miles is no problem, and even an excursion to Storm Lake at 84 miles wouldn't be awful, but Denison Schleswig is 111 miles, Spencer 118, and Lamar is 145 miles, and those will be significant hauls. But head football coach Bob Howard said none of what was announced on Friday, the district, or the travel was unexpected. "I called this," said Howard, noting he even wrote his correct prediction on the board in the high school coach's office. "This wasn't a surprise at all, and we knew there was going to be travel because it's now 6 districts. Rather than being one of the largest 3A schools, which has been the norm for Webster City in recent years, the Lynx will now be one of the smallest 4A programs." And with Fort Dodge dropping down from the largest classification, Howard says it puts his program in the role of hunter again. "As we've told the kids, we can control what we can control, and it's going to be a challenge because Fort Dodge is going to have 100 kids out or more. But it's a neat challenge. I usually work better with chips on the shoulder, and this is a big one when you're basically one of the smallest teams in the class. What won't change is the work ethic that helped Webster City become one of the state's premier programs during its time in 3A. Over the last 13 seasons, the Lynx are 99-38, a 7.23 win percentage with 11 state football appearances in the playoffs. They were 3A state runners-up in 2016, and this fall went 9-1, reaching the state quarterfinals. We're going to get as big and as fast as we can. I know that's coach talk, and that's how we approach every year, but this year it's a big deal. We can't be wasting workout days." For the 4 non-district games, Howard says he's hopeful the Lynx will face Mason City and Humboldt, 2 programs that have agreed to put Webster City on the request sheet that is submitted to the IHSAA. After that, he says it's anybody's guess. "We've got to find 4 teams that will play to play us, and that's the problem. I'm pretty sure we won't get that. So we'll get assigned 2 opponents properly, probably. The South Hamilton football team will be a member of Class 1A District 2 for the next 2 seasons. Joining the Hawks in District 2 will be Belmont Clemmy, Eagle Grove, Manson Northwest Webster, South Central Calhoun, and Woodward Granger. The Hawks will play 8 regular season games, 5 district games, and 3 non-district contests against opponents that will be announced in April. In 1A, 32 teams will qualify for the state playoffs. The Class 4A districts, District 1 includes Denison, Schleswig, Fort Dodge, Lamar, Spencer, Storm Lake, Webster City. District 2 consists of Decorah, Western Dubuque, Marion, Mason City, Waterloo East, Waverly, Shell Rock. District 3 consists of Burlington, Clinton, Fort Madison, Iowa City, Liberty, Mount Pleasant, and North Scott. District 4, Cedar Rapids, Washington, Clear Creek, Amana, Newton, Oskaloosa, Pella, Cedar Rapids, Xavier. District 5 includes Bondurant, Farrar, Boone, Carlisle, Indianola, Norwalk, Perry. District 6 will include Council Bluffs, Thomas Jefferson, Dallas Center, Grimes, Des Moines, Hoover, Glenwood, Council Bluffs, Lewis Central, and Winterset. The Webster City Girls Track and Field team won 3 medals and compiled 7 top 5 finishes in its opening meet of the season Thursday night in Humboldt. Competing at the Nielsen Family Girls Indoor, the Lynx scored 49 points to finish in the 6th position. Humboldt with 132 points claimed the team title ahead of runner-up Carlisle with 111. 2 relays finished in the runner-up position for the Lynx, a quartet of Addie Tesdall, Mackenzie Mischler, Brian Acroy, and Lynn Roberts took the silver in the 60-meter shuttle hurdle relay. Mischler and Tesdall were joined by Dasha Sankey and Kaylin Butts on the second-place distance medley relay. Shelby Queen was the Lynx lone individual medalist as she placed 3rd in the 800. Croy finished in the 5th position in both the 60 hurdles and the 400. Chloe Anderson placed 4th in the high jump, as did the 4x200 crew of Tesdall, Mischler, Bonnie Norenberg, and Kennedy Moore. Webster City will kick off its outdoor season at the Richard Ryan Relays in Gowrie on Tuesday, April 6. The North Central Conference Boys Basketball All-Conference teams were announced recently. The Webster City Daily Freeman Journal says that the first team is made up of Andrew Formanek, a senior from Clear Lake, Carson Scharr, a senior at Iowa Falls Alden, Carson Tobe, junior at Clear Lake. They were all unanimous selections. Noah Nelson, a senior at Algona, Garrett Gosch, a junior at Algona, Connor State, a junior at Clarion Bullfield Dalles, completed the first team. Second team included Sam Fisher of Humboldt, Gabe Goodell at Humboldt, Mario Martinez of Clarion Bullfield Dalles, Eric Ritter of Clear Lake, Tyler Mansky of Algona, and Ty McKinney of Webster City. Third team included Tavis Eklund of Webster City, Tyler Olson of Webster City, Kyle Simpson and James Wartick, both of Algona, Caden Mattson of Humboldt, and Hayden Meyer of St. Edmund. That is the North Central Conference all-conference selection for the first 3 teams. Let's take a look next at some trivia that took place on this day, March 18th. In 1852, Wells and Fargo started the Shipping and Banking Company in New York City. Companies were started by Henry Wells and William G. Fargo, along with several other investors, to launch their namesake business, and is today one of the world's largest banks. The discovery of gold in California in 1849 prompted a huge spike in the demand for cross-country shipping. In 1766, Parliament repealed the Stamp Act. In 1911, Irving Berlin copyrights the biggest pop song of the 20th century. We'll take a closer look at that story. A century even before the phonograph had become a common household item, there was already a burgeoning music industry in the United States based on not the sale of recorded music performances, but on the sale of sheet music. It was in the medium of printed paper. Irving Berlin's Alexander's Ragtime Band, copyrighted on March 18, 1911, was the song that received a multi-million selling smash hit that turned American popular music into a major international phenomenon, both culturally and economically. Heading back to the other things that happened on this date, in 1950, nationalist Chinese forces invaded mainland China. In 1999, three women were murdered at Yosemite National Park. In 1962, we had the French-Algerian truce. In 1933, Studebaker goes bankrupt. In 1925, the Tri-State Tornado occurred. The Tri-State Tornado took place in Missouri, Illinois, and Indiana, killing 695 people, injuring 13,000 people, and causing nearly $17 million in property damage. In 1937, a natural gas explosion killed 300 in a Texas school. The Consolidated School of New London, Texas, sat in the middle of a large oil and natural gas field. The area was dominated by 10,000 oil derricks, 11 of which stood right on school grounds. The school was newly built in the 1930s for close to $1 million, and from its inception bought natural gas from Union Gas to supply its energy needs. At 3:05 on March 18th, a Thursday afternoon, the 694 students and 40 teachers in attendance at the Consolidated School were looking toward the final bell, which was to ring in 10 minutes. Instead, a huge and powerful explosion, which literally blew the roof off the building, leveled the school. The blast, which came without warning because natural gas had no smell back then, was felt by people some 40 miles away and killed most victims instantly. Also on this date, War Relocation Authority is established in the United States in 1942, and in 1969, the United States bombed Cambodia for the first time, and that's a handful of historical events that took place on this date, March 18th. We'll take a look next at an article from the Marshalltown Times-Republican, Severe Weather Awareness Week Prepares for Disaster. Next week is Severe Weather Awareness Week, a week highlighting the importance of preparing for severe weather events. Marshall County has experienced several severe weather events in the last couple of years, said Marshall County Emergency Management Coordinator Kim Elder. It is important that we all practice our severe weather planning and response in the home and business settings. It only takes a few minutes to review what your plant family or place of business plans on doing in the event of severe weather, and this helps for reaction time to improve for real-world events. An annual statewide tornado drill takes place on Wednesday of next week at the beginning at 11 o'clock. Schools, businesses, individuals, and state and local governments are invited to participate. The regular tornado siren testing will be done at the same time on Wednesday of next week as opposed to the normal time on Tuesday. Elder said some people do not know what a tornado siren is used for or what a tornado is. She said after the tornado in Derecho, she took a lot of questions from citizens asking what the siren they heard was. It's hard for us to, in the Midwest, to imagine somewhere without tornadoes, Elder said. We did a lot of education prior to the tornado and the derecho, but we did even more after. She said one thing she wants people to know, Severe Weather Awareness Week, is there are only three instances in which the tornado siren is used. One instance is the required weekly test, and the other two instances are an official tornado warning from the National Weather Service or a sighting from a trained tornado spotter. She said sometimes they will take a citizen's word if the citizen is absolutely sure about seeing a tornado, but they will always send a trained spotter out to make sure. Elder also recommends signing up for Alert Iowa, a free statewide mass notification and emergency messaging system. We all like to think we're not vulnerable and it won't happen here, so they forget to plan, they forget to do their drills, and they forget to be safe, Elder said. We just need to make sure we stay vigilant with our planning and our safety. Speaking of weather, let's go ahead and take a look at the forecast for the next week or so. And I'll get that called up on my cell phone. Looking over the next week, on Friday, we're expecting a high of 54 degrees, followed by a low of 29 under clear skies. Clear on Saturday, high of 59, winds 17 miles per hour with gusts up to 30. Partly cloudy skies on Saturday night, low 41. Nice on Sunday, 63 degrees under partly cloudy skies. Mostly cloudy Sunday night, low of 44. Rain chances increase, 60% chance of rain with a high of 57 degrees expected on Monday. Monday night, cloudy skies with an 80% chance of rain and a low temperature of 43. Tuesday, rain continues, cloudy skies, 80% chance of rain, high temperature of 57. Tuesday night, chance of rain continues, but chances diminish to 40% with a low of around 40 degrees. And on Wednesday, mostly cloudy skies, a 30% chance of precipitation and a high temperature of 53 degrees. Winds for the most part during that time will be in the mid-teens with gusts up to the mid-20s once the rain moves in. That's going to bring us to the end of the reading of the Fort Dodge Messenger for Thursday, March 18th. I'm Kevin Rogers at the microphone. Of course, this podcast and many others are available to you at the iowaradioreading.org website, and we certainly encourage you to enjoy as many podcasts as you wish. I look forward to visiting with you again real soon as we bring you the Fort Dodge Messenger, and sometimes with some help from the Webster City Daily Freeman Journal, and on a rare occasion, the Marshalltown Times Republican. And we bring those papers via IRIS, the Iowa Radio Information Service to the Blind. Stay safe, stay healthy, take good care of yourselves, and we'll talk to you again real soon here on IRIS. Bye-bye for now.